because we should represent righteously. You'll find that even amongst the Almighty, when he established his tabernacle, how many of you know the priests had tailors? Did they not? They had individuals by instruction of the Almighty that was skilled in making their clothes. And they couldn't wear anything, not in his presence. Where did all that change? The farther we get away from the Almighty, claiming to be representing the Almighty, the more people look like the world, like they're representing the world. And Father is, he's saying, listen, guys, I'm generational. I don't change. When he established that system of those who were supposed to represent him, he had it down to the wire, and we can learn a few things from that. Especially if we're going to be running around here talking about we represent the King of Glory and we are his preachers and teachers who are teaching the most important message mankind will ever hear.
Shalom, saints, and welcome to our verse-by-verse study of the book of Exodus. I'm your host and teacher, Arthur Bailey. Jehovah's display of power and authority over nature, the elements, and the resources of Egypt may appear to the denominational disciples or the undiscipled to be singularly targeted and focused on Pharaoh and the Egyptians. However, a closer look into what is written reveals that Jehovah is setting the stage and laying the groundwork for the children of Israel to know who this great and mighty one is that is about to rip them out of the clutches of Pharaoh, enrich them for their years of toil without pay, and set their feet on the path of freedom and righteousness for his name's sake. Join us in this extraordinary revealing portion of Exodus as Jehovah uses Pharaoh and the Egyptians to send a multi-generational message with clear warning signs to the children of Israel of what could and would happen to those who oppose him and harden their hearts against him. Today's study title is Warning Signs for Israel. So, let's study.
What we are going to look at today is another display of Jehovah's power and, of course, his authority over nature, over the elements, and the resources of Egypt. And I pointed out that for many, this lesson is going to appear to the denominational disciples or the undiscipled to be singly targeted and focused on Pharaoh and the Egyptians. However, as we're going to look at it and go through, we're going to see that this passage is revealing that, one, Jehovah is setting the stage and he's laying the groundwork, not just for Pharaoh and the servants of Pharaoh and the Egyptians, but also for the children of Israel, because he's going to demonstrate to them that they may know who this great and mighty one is. Understand, Israel has been in bondage for many, many years. All the gods that they've known and heard of are the gods of the Egyptians. As far as this god of their ancestors, they knew enough about him to cry out, but they had never experienced him while they were in bondage. In fact, their first experience with this mighty one is when Moses showed up one day. It was Moses who came to represent the mighty one of heaven, the Elohim of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Israel. And Moses was the first real encounter after some 400 years of Egyptian bondage, where the children of Israel now can associate something to this mighty one in their day. And of course, you know, they worshiped after hearing Moses had come with a message from them, and immediately their lives got more difficult. All of a sudden, this one that they had cried out to, they start having some issues with and more targeted the representatives. See, the people had an issue with the Almighty, but they targeted their displeasure with him to the ones who represented him. And so now the Almighty is really dealing with Pharaoh. He's taking his sweet time because he's setting the stage. He's setting the stage to make sure that everybody learn the lessons of rebellion and disobedience. He wants everybody to see. Because now he's about to take them out. And one of the things we're going to see, when Moses was instructed to tell the children of Israel to ask the Egyptians, as we're going to see in a later chapter, for their gold, their jewelry. Now, one of the ways you can look at this is compensation for the years of labor without pay. Father is big on fair compensation for labor, an honest day's pay for an honest day's work. And so he's going to make sure all of the Israelites are going to be responsible for asking their neighbors. The neighbors have benefited from the slavery. The Egyptians have benefited from the slavery of the Israelites. The Israelites didn't benefit. And now those who have benefited from their slavery, from their burden, is now going to be part of compensating them before they leave. And we're going to find that even when Father deals with slaves among the children of Israel, that they have a 6-year period, and then the 7th year they're to be released, and they're to be made sure that they're cared for, as we're going to see as we continue. And so Father is fair. He's equitable. Jehovah uses Pharaoh and the Egyptians to send a multi-generational message with clear warning signs to the children of Israel of what could and would happen to those who oppose him and harden their hearts against him. And so in essence, you can say Jehovah was flexing his muscles in advance to the Hebrew Israelites, whom he knew were going to become hard-hearted, stiff-necked, and rebellious after their deliverance from Egypt. See, nothing Israel did surprised the Almighty. In fact, he warned Moses of some things, and before Moses died, he warns Moses that, Moses, you understand something now. I know you've spent your life in my service doing what I've asked you to do to bring these people, but just know, when you dead, just like they didn't listen to you when you was alive. I'm telling you, this is why ministers, preachers, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers, get out the folks' business. They will run you raggedy. They will put their burdens on you to walk out their burdens while they live their lives however they want outside of your presence, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. Your role is to give them what Father gives you and then to get out of the way. Bondage has a way of humbling us. Freedom has a way of instilling and promoting a pride, arrogant, and egotistical self-exaltation. We see this. You can look around the world and see the pride of different nations and how they demonstrate and put their pride on full display. In fact, the Olympics is probably one of the highest echelon of display of pride among nations, competition between them. I can go as far as to say to you that when you begin to deal with nationalism and patriotism, that patriotism builds, instills, and promote pride. That's what it's designed to do, to build, to instill, and to promote pride. Understand what the scriptures do. The scriptures are designed to build, to instill and to cause those who apply those scriptures to humility. There's a big difference between pride and humility. We're going to see that pride goes before destruction. We're going to see that Jehovah does what? He resists. He resists the proud. And who do he give grace to? So bondage has a way of humbling people. Jehovah resists the proud, according to James 4:6, but he giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, Elohim resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. And Pharaoh, the lesson Pharaoh didn't learn, obviously, as we go forward, we're going to see that many think about this. For those of you who've read through the Torah, that all of the people that saw all of these plagues, that saw Jehovah's display of power in Egypt against Pharaoh and against the Egyptians, their carcasses fell dead in the wilderness. Why? Because they didn't learn. They didn't get the message. Father put this on display for all of them to see, and yet they became murmurers, complainers. These are Jehovah's people. You'll see as we go through, Moses continued to intercede, continued to appeal to Jehovah, continued to defend these hard-headed, hard-hearted, stiff-necked folk. Joshua wasn't playing that. He said, listen, y'all gonna have to make a choice, because y'all ain't gonna kill me like you did Moses. See, Moses dedicated his life to y'all, and as a result, you all wore him out to the point to where not only did he intercede time and time and time and time again, but you frustrated him to the point to where he rebelled just like y'all did. Moses, the humblest and meekest man, died because of his rebellion. He became like the people he was defending. That's his legacy. Verse 1. And Jehovah said unto Moses, go in unto Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I might show these my signs before him. That's the first audience. As we're going to see, these things were done also as a witness to the Hebrews, what would happen to them if they refused to obey. Jehovah, look at this next verse. That thou mayest tell in the ears of who? Your sons. And of your sons' sons. What things I have wrought in Egypt, and my signs which I've done among them. That you may know. This is not for Pharaoh. This is for y'all. That you may know who I am. It's amazing, brothers and sisters, that people can try to represent the Almighty and don't even know who he is. I was thinking today, and forgive me in advance if what I'm about to say bother you, and if it bothers you, it should. So I guess maybe my forgiveness is not, asking for forgiveness is not genuine, so I retract it. But today, I was thinking as I was getting dressed, because folks have, you know, they wanted to challenge, they've said some things, they make their little remarks and things of that nature. But here's what I've learned. Now, I've never been in politics, but I've watched politics. Even when I wasn't even aware that I was watching politics, there was several programs. TV, you know, has a tendency to shape us. And in the days that I was growing up, as I've said, I watched TV with my mom. I watched, you know, Lawrence Welk. It's like, you know, young black guy watching Lawrence Welk, but that's what was on TV. That's what we watched. That's what my mama liked. So, you know, you didn't have no remote. You were the remote. Gilligan Island. lifestyle of the rich and famous. What is that? The plane. What was that? Fantasy Island. I'm watching all of these programs that is putting ideas in my head. It's helping to shape and mold me as to how I want to live when I grow up compared to how I live right now. Big difference. And in watching all of this and it molding and shaping, it began to put ideas in my head. And when I looked at a lot of these programs, especially international programs, this is where the idea of politics and the message of politicking came. We are fascinated in today's society about the royals, the people of England, the Queen, the headlines of how they live, the political dynasties of America, the Kennedys and others, the Bushes, I know these are modern, but going all the way back. Matter of fact, here in Charlotte, one of the presidential libraries is the Polk Library, which is right off of Polk Road there in Pineville, North Carolina, which I pass pretty much every time I come into the area of Charlotte. And what am I getting at? When it came down to the people who represented the people, if you go to any state capital, you go to any federal capital, the federal capital, and you'll see the representatives. You'll see the Senate and the representatives of the people dressed like this. Who are they representing? They're representing their constituents. When I look at the cabinet of different administrations and they choose ambassadors, and America has hundreds of ambassadors and embassies around the world. These people are sent from America, and the ambassadors are sent from those different countries to represent those different countries in their embassies here in the United States. And how do they dress? How do they dress? Because, see, they're representing their constituency. They're representing their country. Now, you got people running around here talking about they're ambassadors of the Almighty and spokespersons for the Almighty. And when they stand up in their flip-flops and their shorts and want to teach Torah portions as an ambassador, it's like, how dare you represent the king? Now, you claim to be representing a king. There is no kingdom that I know of where its representatives would look like some of these folks who claim to be representing the King of Kings. You, how you look, how you dress, how you present yourself should be reflective on who you claim to be representing. And if you look amongst the kingdom of men, you look among the kingdoms of this world, the only time you will see the representatives of the world in something other than suit and tie is when they're running for re-elections. And what do? They got their sleeves rolled up. They got their pants. You don't see them running around here with flip-flops and shorts. And you certainly don't see it in the halls of power. When you, as an ambassador and a representative of the King of Glory, then you should represent righteously and reflect who you represent when you are in representative mode. And that's why. So that was a little soapbox, but I wanted to throw that out there because we should represent righteously. You'll find that even amongst the Almighty, when he established his tabernacle, How many of you know the priests had tailors? Did they not? They had individuals by instruction of the Almighty that was skilled in making their clothes. And they couldn't wear anything, not in his presence. Where did all that change? The farther we get away from the Almighty, claiming to be representing the Almighty, the more people look like the world, like they're representing the world. And Father is, he's saying, listen, guys, I'm generational. I don't change. When he established that system of those who were supposed to represent him, he had it down to the wire. And we can learn a few things from that, especially if we're going to be running around here talking about we represent the King of Glory and we are his preachers and teachers who are teaching the most important message mankind will ever hear. You would never see the king send somebody out looking like that. Never. This passage revealed the signs where for Pharaoh, his servants, Moses, Aaron, the children of Israel, their sons, and their sons' sons, not just for Pharaoh. So what is it saying? It's revealing these signs were for Pharaoh and his servants and Moses and Aaron and the children of Israel and their sons' sons. Jehovah instructed Moses to tell these encounters to the second and third generation of the Hebrew Israelites. And so we're going to see Moses recounts to Israel after they had been delivered the account of Jehovah's dealing with Pharaoh. Here's one such account in Deuteronomy 6:20. And when thy son asked thee in time to come, saying, what mean the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which Jehovah your Elohim has commanded you, then you shall say unto your son, we were Pharaoh's bondsmen in Egypt. Don't ever forget you were a slave in Egypt. Don't ever forget where you came from. And the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord showed signs and wonders, great and sore, upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, and upon all his household before our eyes. They saw it. He did this stuff in front of us. We saw it. And he brought us from this that he might bring us in to give us the land which he swore unto our fathers. And Jehovah commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear Jehovah, our Elohim, for our good always. The moment you stop fearing him, you're a fool. The moment you start taking matters in your own hands, you're a fool. Because what are you saying? By doing so, you know better than he. Your ways are better than his ways. How's that working out for you? That he might preserve us alive. In other words, so he won't kill us. Because I'm going to tell you, he killed a whole lot of Israelites. A whole bunch. On the way from Egypt to the promised land. They never made it in either. And it shall be our righteousness if we observe to do all these commandments before Jehovah our Elohim, as he has commanded us. Verse 3. I don't know if I'm going to get through verse 20. I better pick this up. And Moses and Aaron came in unto Pharaoh and said unto him, thus saith Jehovah Elohim of the Hebrews. Now remember, he continued to make it known who his people were. Says, listen, I'm not here for them. I'm here for them. I'm here. I'm the Elohim of the Hebrews. Y'all hear that? I'm the Elohim of the Hebrews. Hebrews, do y'all hear that? I am the one who delivered you, Hebrews. Every Hebrew need to get this etched in their brains, etched in their spirit, etched in their heart, etched in their mind, so that they will never forget who he is. Because the moment you forget who you is or who he is, you think you something. So it says, thus saith Jehovah, God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go that they may serve me. Pharaoh's pride, lack of humility, hardened heart, and refusal to obey Jehovah would be his downfall. And Moses warns Pharaoh of what is going to happen if he refused to humble himself. What does he say? If you don't, if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring the locusts into your coast. And they shall cover the face of the earth that one cannot be able to see the earth. And they shall eat the residue of that which is escaped. In other words, what the hail didn't destroy, what the flies and the gnats didn't destroy, the animals that survived, the people who weren't killed that survived. What's going to happen now is they're not going to have anything fresh to eat. Why? Because these locusts, they're going to eat the residue of that which is left, that which is escaped, which remain unto you from the hail, and shall eat every tree which groweth for you out of the field. Nothing will remain. And they shall fill thy houses and the houses of all thy servants and the houses of all the Egyptians, which neither thy fathers nor thy fathers' fathers have seen. And so he said, listen, look back in your history. It's never happened before. Now, if Pharaoh had to look back in his history, he would have known better. See, you know, I'm looking back at American history. You could look back on the history of any country, any nationality, any people. And I'm always fascinated by people who want to make and lay claim about, you know, God establishing the state of Israel in 1948. And it's like, you know, okay, well, who established all the states around Israel? I mean, who established them? Who made the nations? Because you'll see that nations have gone from the beginning, their names have changed, empires have changed, every state, every nation was formed by some group of individuals, except the first land of Israel. Why? He took it from all of the ites around them, the Canaanites, the Amalekites, the Zebulite, you know, whoever they were. We can go back and look at some of their names, but he says, listen, this is these people's land. I'm going to take it from them. I'm going to give it to you. It was the only time in American or in world history where we see Father designated specific land mass to specific groups of people. That land will always be what Father designated it for. And guess what? When he established it for his plan, it's going to be established based on his model. It won't be some governmental system that is man-made to govern the land that the creator. See, man makes the laws and the rules for the lands they govern, that they create. Jehovah makes the rules and set in place the government and the land that he established. And you can say what you want to say about it, because it really doesn't matter what, I don't care how many miracles and how many signs and how many wonders people claim and write about. And I know I'm upsetting some folks. But for so long and for too long, people have bought the narratives of men, which have gotten people and systems in place and belief systems that is contrary to the things that are written. Father will set up his government just like he did the first time he established Israel as a nation. He formed them in the land of Egypt, brought them out of the land of Egypt, established them in the land, and every time they rebelled, every time they disobeyed him, he drove them out of the land, and every time he brought them back into the land, what did he do? He established his government. That's what he's always done. And now, he doesn't change. He is the same today, as you're going to see from prophecy. And again, I know there's a lot of things out there that is being said, a lot of people who are making statements. And just like, you know, did God establish America? Now, see, and this is the other part that don't make sense, that God, who we know didn't establish America, because we know that it has been attributed to some folks, you know, back in the 1500s, and then established by some documentations that we know to be constitutions and just documentation that governs the land. And then in all of his wisdom decided to make the United States of America, that he didn't establish, to be the overseer of the land of Israel. And whatever happened, whatever America does concerning Israel, you know, it's going to happen to America. Well, what about all these other countries and nations and states? I'm going to tell you something. Some of the most ridiculous talking people are Christians and their prophetic books. There's only one book that we should be focused on, and we should be looking at what this book say in order to determine and to monitor what he's doing. Because he's made it very clear all the way to the very end of the book. We don't have to look for signs. We don't have to look for wonders. All we have to do is look in the book. But you got people who've lost their God-fearing mind following some of these folks who are spouting off things and saying things. Why? Because this is what people want to hear. They don't want to hear, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. They don't want to hear the feasts are still for the people of Jehovah today. They don't want to hear that we are under the law by grace. They don't want to hear that the law is not done away with. No, they want to celebrate their Christmas and celebrate their Easters and celebrate all of their man-made religious days, holidays, and totally ignore the word of Jehovah, and then try to prop up nations as if, because see, here's what it really boils down to, brothers and sisters. There's only one state that God established. What other state did he establish? What other country did he personally establish? What other nation did he establish? Because if you listen to the rhetoric of men, there's only one of all the nations and all the countries in the world. There's only one that he established. And he did it in 1948. Okay. I've said my piece, so y'all can shoot and send nasty emails and all of that stuff. But let's move on. Did I just mess up this teaching? I just need to get that off my chest, because there's some silly stuff going on out there. There's so much silly nonsense going on right now. Folks don't know where they're going or coming. I was thinking today, the best in the nations don't represent the nations like the best in the nations used to represent the nations back in the day. You know what I'm saying? It's like, where did these people coming from? Who raised these folks? It's so sad. And the only hope for man is not in all these off prophecies and off teachings that people are piling and piling on us and piling on us. You want to make aliyah? Don't be trying to get to Israel. You better make aliyah to this. This is where the people need to make aliyah to. This is where people need to get back to. Get back to what is written. Because when you get back to what is written, you get back to the one who gave it to be written. And now, who we look to? We don't look for Fox News. We don't look for CNN News. We don't look for none of these off-brand news sites who are supposed to be giving us the truth. Look, they're all in competition with one another, and they're all trying to make money. That's their job. There's only one newsmaker, really one, that matters. And that is the one who speaks to us and cause us to repent and to take our focus off all these things that we've put our focus on and to refocus back to him. Now, I know this is not popular. I'm not here to be popular. It's about calling people to repentance and to return to the one who has called us to be refocused to the gospel of the kingdom. Stop letting people take our voices and representing us or misrepresenting us and ultimately misrepresenting him. It's time for us to stand for what is right, speak his truth, and set people free from all this other nonsense. Because there's a lot of nonsense going on, brothers and sisters. And I know I'm not the only one who's saying it. I just may have a good platform where people can hear it. And you'd be surprised of how many folks are writing us and calling me and telling me, you know, you got the platform, but the Almighty has given me words to share. And, you know, I want to give these words to you so you can speak, because it's like, you know what? I know why he gave me what he gave me to do what I'm doing. Moses tells Pharaoh, listen, Moses is not there representing Moses. Matter of fact, Moses don't even want to be there. Moses is not there representing Aaron. Moses is not even there representing the children of Israel. Moses has one boss, one. And even though Pharaoh is a very powerful person, Moses knows who is all powerful. But at some point he do like a lot of preachers do. They take their eyes off of him and start putting their eyes on the people. People don't know what they want. They think they do. Most of the stuff people pursue destroys them. Think about it. Most of the things people go hard after is to their own destruction. They don't want nobody telling them what to do. Don't want nobody up in their face. They want to go into this little den and that little hole in the wall and that little dark corner and do all that dark stuff out there until they realize darkness is not the way. And there is another better way, but it's going to take some humility to admit that you were wrong. It's going to take a lot of humility to say, you know, I went down that road. I thought I knew what I was doing, but I come to realize I didn't have a clue. And there are a lot of folks out there that is lost and blind. And unfortunately, a lot of them got big platforms, making millions of dollars every year on the platform, giving you the news, giving you information that is being fed to the masses, that is causing the masses to be brainwashed with information, most of it inaccurate, and it don't set nobody free. In fact, it put more people in bondage, and many of them go end up in jail. The only thing that set men free is his truth. The moment we forget that, the moment we to a loss. I don't need a politician to help me get his message out. Politicians try to use me. I ain't the one. I have one master, one Lord. And the sooner you learn, the better. Because guess what? Father ain't competing with nobody. Ain't no competition. There's nobody who can compete with him. And Pharaoh's going to find this out real soon. And Pharaoh's servant said unto him, how long shall this man be a snare unto us? Now, the Bible says he hardened their hearts. But even in their hard-heartedness, they know, you know what? Listen. Well, it said, how long shall this man be a snare unto us? Let the men go. Let the men go. Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Knowest thou not yet that Egypt is destroyed? Pharaoh, open your eyes, bro. Egypt is devastated. Let the men go. Notice what they said. Let the men go. Even after Jehovah hardened Pharaoh's heart and the hearts of his servants, the servants advised Pharaoh to let the men go because of the destruction caused to Egypt because of them and Moses. After receiving counsel from his servants, Pharaoh summoned Moses and engaged in negotiations, of which Moses took no part in. He ignored altogether. And Moses and Aaron, verse 8, were brought again unto Pharaoh, and he said unto them, go serve the Lord your God. But who are they that shall go? And Moses says, we will go. Who? The young, the old, sons and daughters. So who is Father calling to serve? The sons, the daughters, the young, the old, the herd, the flocks. Do you know that when it comes down to the Sabbath day, everybody rests? On the Sabbath day, every creature is on the same page. The men, the women, the sons, the daughters, the servants, the animals. And so Jehovah instructs everything in his creation, especially on the seventh day, rests. There is no exemptions. According to his instructions, no exemptions. The kingdoms of men could care less about that. The kingdom of the United States, supposed to be a Christian country, you know, Christians don't keep the Sabbath. And those who do keep the Sabbath, like the Seventh-day Adventists, they say they're not Christians, they're cults. Anybody who keeps the Sabbath, they've fallen from grace, according to these wise people. And there's a whole bunch of them out there. And can I give you a heads up? This is why I'm coming hard. I'm coming so hard. Matter of fact, it's going to get harder. Why? Because this pandemic has totally restructured how communications is going to come to you. It will no longer be the way it was. This pandemic, through the social media platforms, have made everybody pastors, have made everybody prophets, have made preachers, teachers, evangelists. Everybody and their mama got a ministry. Many of these people, they're not responsible for any of y'all. It's not about taking the responsibility of equipping the saints as much as it is spouting out their revelations, spouting out their dreams, spouting out their daydreams, spouting off their thoughts, asking questions that has nothing to do with anything, trying to make themselves relevant, get likes and shares and views. When it comes down to being responsible and concerned about equipping the saints for work of ministry, you don't see that in a whole lot of these places, in a whole lot of these people. And because of it, the discernments of people is going to diminish. The love of many is going to wax cold, and we've already seen that we live in a nation of cold-hearted, loveless people. And it ain't gonna get no better. I can tell you that right now. You can hope, you can wish, you can pray. People have been praying for millennia. People have been praying for decades. People have been praying, and they'll continue to pray and look at the progression. Brothers and sisters, this is a time to act. This is a time to stand bold and speak the truth. It's not about trying to compete with somebody or get in somebody else's face. It's about helping the people begin to refocus, get their eyes back where they belong in his word, and get their walk and their step in alignment with his instructions. When we do that, you'll find that your discernment will begin to increase. Your awareness of the Most High will begin to heighten. His voice will be a lot less faint. His direction will become a lot more clear. And just because somebody put a prayer shawl on them and a Star David in the background, that doesn't mean nothing. The truth will make you free. And that truth is the only truth you apply in your life. If you don't apply it, all you got is head knowledge and a big head. So, verse 10. And he said unto them, let the Lord be so with you, as I will let you go, and your little ones, look to it, for evil is before you. Now, Pharaoh knew he was no match for Jehovah, but he still thought he had some say in the matter. And therefore, he's going to attempt to negotiate by allowing only the men to go. Not so. Go now, you that are men, and serve Jehovah. For that you did desire. Now, who desired there? When did Moses say, let just the men go? It was always let my people go. Who said, let the men go? Pharaoh's servants. Remember? What did they say? Pharaoh's servants said unto him, how long shall this man be a snare unto us? Let the men go. And so now he's saying, now Moses refuses Pharaoh's negotiation tactic, follow the instructions given to him by Jehovah, and speak. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come up upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land, even all that the hail have left. And Moses stretched forth his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought his east wind upon the land all that day and all that night. And when it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. So the locusts was blown in. They were blown in by a strong east wind, specifically caused by Jehovah. Why? To devastate the remaining vegetation left in Egypt after the hail. And the locusts went over all the land of Egypt and rested in all the coasts of Egypt. Very grievous were they. Before them, there were no such locusts as they, neither after them shall be such. Nothing could be seen except locusts. They were everywhere. You look, the tree looked like, you know, it was just a locust-formed tree. The bush, the ground, everywhere locusts. For they covered the face of the whole earth, so that the land was darkened. And they did eat every herb of the land and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left. And there remained not any green thing in the trees or in the herbs of the field through all the land of Egypt. All greening remaining vegetation was devastated, including the leaves and the fruit of the trees. So Egypt was stripped bare. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron in haste. And he said, I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you. So now Pharaoh acknowledges he has sinned against Jehovah, asked for forgiveness, prayed for Moses to ask Jehovah to remove the death from him. And this death that he's going to talk about, he says, now therefore forgive I pray thee, my sin only this once, and entreat the Lord your God that he may take away from me this death only. Why? The death in reference was due to the land being devastated due to the depletion of crops, the animals, and the people who had been killed by the previous plagues. Now it's like, you know, Egypt is in a place to starve to death. Devastation. Now, this is the same Jehovah that preserved the children of Israel in a land with 7 years of plenty. The very one who used the land to establish his people as a nation is now about to destroy that very nation he used to establish his people as a nation. You see, if any nation don't work with the Almighty, it's futile. It's a dangerous thing. And I'll tell you, the ungodliness, the abominations, the way of thinking, the way of life, the defiling of lands, the laws of men, the things that are being permitted by those who make laws and adjust these laws to allow the very things that the Almighty and his word calls abominations to thrive and to live in harmony and to support. We are in trouble. And this is not a political issue. It never has been. It has always been a moral issue among men, a spiritual issue from the one who gave his instructions that men have decided they refuse to live by and can make better and greater laws for themselves than he ever can. Not to mention to exile the creator from the lawmaking process. Nope, close the doors. You're not welcomed here. You know, we got the Bible. If we need it, we won't need it, but we got it because it's a good book. It's a good book for making people swear oaths. That's about all the Bible is good for these days in the political arenas. It's a good book to swear oaths on. Man, I am in so much trouble. But that's all right. Verse 18, and he went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord, and Jehovah turned a mighty strong west wind. So first it was an east wind to bring the locusts in. He used the west wind to drive them out. He took away the locusts and cast them into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in all the coasts of Egypt. The locusts were removed by a strong west wind, and specifically caused for Jehovah for the purpose of devastating the remaining vegetation. Now, but Jehovah hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he would not let the children of Israel go. And that's the last verse. But what has happened so far is these plagues of Egypt, they're also called miracles. The miracles of Jehovah, wrought by the hands of Moses and Aaron. Thus far, this is what it's called. One, the waterways to turn to blood. Two, frogs to cover the land, fill the houses, and then they left a stench when they died. Three, the dust to turn to lice or gnats. Four, flies to fill the land. Five, livestock to die and men. Boils to cover the bodies of the people. Well, livestock to die. Verse number seven, hail and fire to devastate the land and people who would not come inside, not to mention the animals. And then locusts to devastate the remaining vegetation. Now, all of this devastation is happening in one geography against one people with one leader, and they still refuse to hear. They still refuse to hear. So with that said, that is the end of our teaching today.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. You can find more inspirational teachings and download our free ebooks on our ministry website at arthurbaileyministries.com. Please follow us on Facebook at House of Israel - Arthur Bailey Ministries, on Instagram at Apostle Arthur Bailey, on Twitter at Apostle Bailey, and you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Apostle Arthur Bailey 1. If you're in the Charlotte area, please come and fellowship with us. We'll do our best to make you feel right at home. Our address is on our website at the About link under Contact Us. Again, thank you for joining us, and until next time, Shalom, Saints.